listening to The Couple's Guide Podcast.
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Talia.
We're both licensed marriage and family therapists, and today,
like every day,
we're debunking myths and delivering truth about dating, relationships, and everything in between.
Trust us.
It's awesome.
I'm leaving.
Why would you leave now?
We're not compatible long-term, Ryan. You know this. We've fought about this before.
But our chemistry is off the charts.
Woo-hoo. You know what? That can only get us so far. And that was super cute in the beginning, but I'm getting sick of it. So
I don't know. Is compatibility really important? I think you're kind of overrating it.
Yeah, you're right. I do that sometimes. Probably because of my core values, but we've never gotten along on those anyway, so it doesn't matter.
I don't know. We're kind of agreeing right now, which means I think we're compatible. Uh-oh, meta.
Oh, boy.
Nice. Episode 78, compatibility. Important or overrated?
I know some people who fall in each camp, so I am excited for today's discussion.
Yeah. I think this is just like a common chat just with all people in relationships, but then it's also in our field, something that we look for and talk about in couples therapy. And I'm kind of surprised that there isn't a consensus about this in general that we haven't come to in society yet, that how important is compatibility? And what does compatibility even mean? What are we looking at when we're saying, hey, are you actually compatible with someone? And this dynamic tends to come up when you have two people who are attracted to each other. They've started maybe dating and are starting to get to know each other because that initial like flare and that little spark is there. But as you start to get to know someone, you start going, well, who are you? What do you care about? What is this? And that's where it starts shifting away from like just baseline chemistry into, hey, are we compatible? Is this actually someone that I want to, with intention, choose because I can see a future with this human? Or are we just getting swept along on the high and the emotional, physical, chemical flood of a new partner?
Yes, I think this is a great topic and it comes up quite a bit. I mentioned before we recorded, I did a reel the other week on chemistry versus compatibility to highlight the difference. And I gave the example of it being like you're trying on clothes in a dressing room and it's the cutest top that you've ever seen. And it looks so good in the dressing room. And in my example, I was like, and then you take it home and you realize it doesn't fit the same. It matches none of your clothes. All your friends think it's terrible. They've said that you've brought this before and it's not your style, right? Like the metaphor or analogy can continue from there. But truly, the goal, I think, for most couples, at least that we see or that who want to be in a long-term committed relationship, is to have both the initial chemistry, the excitement, the attraction. You think they're sexy, your pupils dilate, your perspiration rate can increase, your respiration rate can increase, right? You have this biochemical response to like, oh, that person's hot. Like, I'm going to see if I want to put my parts near them or not. And would it last long-term? And then past that, which if you are able to get past that, that is really where the discussion of compatibility comes into play, more the long-term life choices, more about core values, about goals, career, do you want kids or not? Is religion important or not? How important is family or is it not? These deeper nuanced discussions that don't often get brought up when we're just staring at the person and being like, they are so attractive. Oh my gosh. That's the initial chemistry, which again, super cool to have. Not required though for long-term compatibility, which is another topic that we can explore today as well.
Yeah. And I think when you're describing this kind of shift from that initial excitement with a partner into now you're in a sense assessing if they're life partner material for the future. Yeah. You already mentioned it, but biggest thing I think about compatibility are core values.
Oh yeah.
Now, a lot of times we tend to not be attracted to people who have different core values. Mm-hmm. We tend to find that connection with people who generally agree with us on like the basic stuff that we see. And it can, you know, a good example is just as simple as like, what do we like to do? Hey, if I meet you Right. And I'm like, hey, do you want to go on a hike with me? And you're like, oh, physical outdoor activity? That doesn't sound very fun. We may not click initially because we might have different values of how we like to consider our lifestyles,
right.
Which is fine. It's just, we may not have clicked initially. But when mm-hmm. you are diving into the deeper level of core values and you're getting to know someone, that's really where I start looking at the compatibility factor that mm-hmm. what are our values? Does this fit?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I did actually just mention lifestyle also. I think core values are the foundation for lifestyle choices. I think those values tend to inform how we choose to live our lifestyle. Hiking is another good example, mm-hmm. which is one of mine because that's what I value and I love hiking. Mm-hmm. If I didn't value the outdoors or physical activity, I wouldn't love hiking.
Correct.
So it leads to that.
Correct. And we've talked about this before on the podcast, how important core values are. If you are listening and have none of yours identified, or it's been a while since you have, I highly recommend pressing pause and going and taking an assessment. I know I give it to my clients or as part of my masterclass, if I'm teaching in more of a hands-off approach, and my students get it as well. Exploring the core values that mean the most to you, like you've mentioned, right? Being outdoors, connecting with nature, I think could fall under that. Okay. Perhaps a sense of freedom, a sense of fun and adventure, novelty. Core values could be communication, family, a sense of autonomy, me time. There's so many. There are so many core values out there. Really picking 10 and then narrowing it down to 3 to 5. When I say this, mainly because of this exercise that you can do, making sure you have those identified, ideally prior to finding the long-term partnership. But even if you are noticing, oh, we had really good chemistry at first, and I don't think we're very compatible long-term, it likely is due to a core value difference. Thus, it's due to a lifestyle difference, right? It like leads into each other, like you're saying. So if I don't value fun and adventure and I don't value the outdoors, what would that even look like long-term in a marriage or a relationship? If I don't also value autonomy, we're very incompatible, right? Like that would be the only exception I could see, is like, I like my independence so much and I don't value the outdoors. So you go do you, and I'll do what I want. And then we'll go from there. That may not match with everybody, with love languages, et cetera, when you add those in as well.
Well, and I'm going to use some of those examples, I think, to look at the other end of the spectrum, or maybe play a little devil's advocate, because I do genuinely believe, and I want this message to be out there, that compatibility matters. So I do think it's important when you look at the question, important or overrated. But on the flip side, like, why is it that perhaps it could be looked at as overrated?
Right.
I'm not saying, and I bet you're going to agree with me, that it doesn't mean you have to have all the same core values. You don't have to be a carbon copy of someone. And even as you love and have taught me to say, it's like, you don't want to date yourself. That would be a nightmare. So you do want these differences, but you want some alignment, if you will, like the Venn diagram of core values.
You should have more overlapping than not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, or actually I want to do or, because I want to... I agree with that, but I want to play a little devil's advocate again. Or it could be, if you don't have as much overlapping, but maybe there's a shared core value of deep, genuine acceptance of differences, that can get you into a different place of compatibility. So for example, you were saying autonomy is such an important core value. The opposite being what? I don't want to say codependency. But that's the negative version. The other way is like,
I don't think there is a positive opposite of autonomy.
No, there's definitely a good opposite of, instead of autonomy, there's teamwork, collaboration. And I get that you can have both, but if it's more important to be, say, like co-regulated in a team and always connected versus very strongly autonomous, those are very different approaches.
Yeah.
For a lot of couples, that could be a break of a core value. Compatibility is not there. But my devil's advocate piece is saying, but if you both share a different core value of accepting the person's differences, you might have a compatibility bridge. You might have a place where it's like, oh, okay, well, that's how my partner is. My partner likes to go off and go hiking on their own. and that's fine. That sucks for me because I miss them, but I can tolerate that we're different and trust that they'll come back to me. So, right. So I'm getting a little convoluted into the example, but I do think there is a place where you don't have to be so like that big Venn diagram and you know, everything is aligned. If maybe there's these other pieces that can fit in how you manage the difference of your core values.
Yes, I think it's still, you have, go ahead.
It's still on a deep, another level, you're still showing compatibility. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying it doesn't have to be as like easy or direct of we like the same things or these base values are the same. It can be also another level of we have relational compatibility of we respect each other. We, you know, can acknowledge our differences. We can communicate our differences. So there's also like a different type of core value that can get you through having very different places. I think it's more difficult. And again, this is even my version of a devil's advocacy thing. I'm not even saying like, don't do this or that compatibility is overrated because I definitely don't think it is. I think you want a strong Venn diagram, but it's not the end of the world if you have these more deeper, subtle relational values that can help you get through it.
Yeah, there's individual core values and then there's relationship core values. So my individual core values do not change when I'm in a relationship. What changes would be the ability to act on my relationship core values. So often those are communication, shared goals, a plan for the future, sex, intimacy, frequency and intensity, duration, et cetera, whatever factors you want to put on that. Do we have the same preoccupation or lack thereof about the relationship? How the prioritization of the relationship fits into my or their personal core values and the rest of our life? And family, what does family mean? Not only the family you came from, but if or when a family is going to come from you. And if so, what does that family look like? Those, I would say, are ideally, but really, if we can strive for that as individuals, those are not core values to settle on or negatively compromise on or sacrifice, mainly because of the long-term risk for resentment, for conflict, for frustration. If you can identify in the beginning, we have chemistry, right? I go on this date and, oh, he's so good, whatever. This is just, I'm over the moon about him. And the more we talk, he doesn't want to be around his family. He's not close to them at all. He has no career aspirations in life. He's very happy, not making anything negative about like a management position, but has no future things to grow past that. Doesn't like being outdoors. Doesn't like working out. Doesn't honor that I need a lot of communication, right? If that just sounds like a nightmare of a relationship to me to be in, especially one long-term. And I think when you get clear on what are you valuing individually, and what do you want a long-term relationship to uphold or to add and benefit in your life? That's really being clear where you don't have to settle. And again, like you're saying, it doesn't mean you have to have every single one. The core ones I do think would be communication, fidelity, and loyalty to the relationship. Right? What does that mean to be prioritized and be committed? And family. How important is your family to you? How important is your partner's family to them? And do you want children? Because it's two yeses or one no. There's not like a compromise and you have like half a kid. Like that doesn't, it's either happening or it's not happening. And so those would be, at least off the top of my head, what I would tell people listening, really be mindful of that. And you can ask those things intentionally and casually on the first date with somebody you do feel chemistry with, or in the first 3 to 6 months with somebody you are still having that quote unquote honeymoon phase limerence chemistry with. You know, what do you imagine your life would be like in 3 to 5 years? Uh-huh. They have a decent semblance of a plan and it aligns. Great. But what if they value travel and they want to move to a new country every 6 months? Uh-huh. Not really going to work long-term compatibility wise. If I want to stay right here, not move and have kids in the next 2 years, right? You have to be having these conversations. It feels great to have chemistry. And so many people are, well, I don't want to ruin it. If it gets ruined by having these very deep discussions of, will this last? Will the chemistry turn into compatibility? They weren't meant for you anyway. Yeah. May as well get that out of the way so you don't waste either of your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100% agree. Like, absolutely have that conversation.
Yes.
And I think a good question to ask ourselves individually when we're looking at these core values is, how firm am I in the values that I'm thinking about? Mm-hmm. So for example, family? Because this is one that I've actually like had to check with myself over time, and it's shifted.
Same.
So good example of, is this a core value that is very firm for me? Like there's no wiggle mm-hmm. room. Like I have always wanted to have a large family. I want kids. There's no wiggle room there for me. Or is it, I really do want a big family, but if my, and that's the lifestyle I would like, but if my, the partner who I find and all these other things are there and they're not as into it, maybe I have some wiggle room there. And I need to be honest with myself to go, no, I think I'd be okay not having a family if that's what my partner wants.
Right.
If that was, say, a firm boundary for them on their value of not having kids in their life, mm-hmm. cool. But you need to be honest with yourself about it. Like we say all the time, checking yourself, how firm am I? And then what this came from your thing, and you got to talk about it and be direct with your partner about it and be genuine to see where you two are at, to see what's up. That's how you can discuss the compatibility piece.
And it's uncomfortable. I've previously, currently, in the future, it will be thematic in the couples that I see. And I know, I imagine you can attest to this as well. It's an uncomfortable at times conversation to have, and namely when the conversation happens multiple years into the relationship and you look at your, I have partners look at each other on the couch and they're just like, yeah, this isn't what it was like in the beginning. So even some couples who are listening and who will listen to this do have those conversations, and you shift and change over time, which is also why I am a big proponent of work on yourself for your whole life. Not that you're broken or need fixing or it's this constant project, nothing like that. Continue to get to know yourself as you grow, as you age, as you have different life experiences, your core values likely will shift, mm-hmm. right? And that's just decade to decade of your life. That's if you're a parent or not, if you have ailing parents or not, right? There's so much nuance that goes into it. I would definitely piggyback on what you're saying and say, work on yourself, get to know yourself, get married later. And I'm not saying everybody has to do this. If you happen to find the person that you're with very early and you're very compatible, that's wonderful. I think that's a wonderful thing. You can spare yourself having to be on dating apps. There's a whole other world that you never have to explore. Good for you. I'm very happy for you. And buckle up and be prepared that naturally through the course of life, let's say you meet your partner at 21 years old. First of all, your frontal lobe's not even fully developed. Second of all, you have not been through these major life experiences likely that you will go through by 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50. Be mindful a little bit future telling here. What is this person going to be like in the future? Do they have any idea of it? Even if it is only a discussion at that point, many couples that I work with do not discuss this ahead of time. They did not think, because we operate under the assumption that people are like us. They think like us. There's a familiarity to that. People will value family just as much as I will. That is certainly not the case. People will value self-development and growth just as much as I will. That is certainly not the case. And people change their mind on having kids. It happens very typically in the early to mid 30s, whether it's I never wanted them and now I do, or I really did and now I don't. Be open-minded in that discussion. Even an initial agreement with your partner on these topics may shift and change. Do not cast it upon your partners, this negative, how could you betray us? It's thanks so much for updating me. Uh-huh. I'm going to need some time to process this information, either solo or with you. Let's have a new discussion, right? Uh-huh. Sometimes things change. If, you know, if you're planning on having kids this year, let's say, and you have ailing parents, is this the best time to do that? Do you want to be grieving the entire time you're pregnant? Is there a pressure to get, you know, started on kids early because of this, or get married early because of parents passing away? I've had couples like that too, where they move up the wedding date so soon, and that alone causes so much stress. They end up either not wanting to be together or rushing through it and feeling like we didn't even get to enjoy our wedding because we were trying to reach this milestone for having our family, who is very important to us, be there. There's this is such a rich in-depth discussion when it comes to these nuanced compatibility factors. Every couple is different. However, most couples will cover these topics at some point. Ideally, do it before you're married.
Yeah. And do it with intention and earlier on instead of when a crisis is happening.
That's Don't wait why. Until it's a fight.
Yeah. That's why in my premarital counseling sessions, one session I devote to is a discussion of, hey, how will you two navigate change in your world? Mm-hmm. And most couples, you know, start with going, oh, well, you know, they think about like big, difficult changes or big, good changes where it's like, oh, what's it gonna be like to have kids? Or, oh, what happens if we lose a job? Or, oh, what happens if we get a medical diagnosis? Still important to talk about, but on compatibility and values, I tend to get to go there too with my premarital counseling clients about, well, what happens when you grow, and just what you've been talking about, Talia, when you grow over time and you realize one or both of you has really changed something. Something just goes on. Get ready for that. Let people know. That's what I'm saying on the podcast now. Get ready. That's what you're saying. It's going to happen. But what's the conversation like when that goes down? The earlier you talk about it, if you're noticing, you know what? I was agnostic all my life, but I think I'm starting to question that. I think I might want to go explore faith systems. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I was hanging out with my buddy at their mosque, and I think I might want to go deep into that exploration and see. And if you start that discussion early with your partner after 20 years of marriage, you know, and then you're like, okay, that's different. But like you said, you can process, the partner can process individually or with them.
Yep.
And then if there does become this big change, you can at least tackle it as a team or have a way of going, wow, this is really going to change our relationship, because now this core value shift of faith has come in. What does that mean for us? There's no direct answer to that question, but the point is the process of early attuning to yourself, going, I think this is a value that I'm noticing shifting, bringing it to my partner who I've chosen to commit my life to and say, hey, this is going on for me. And then A, you don't have to be alone in that change, but also B, be respectful of the relationship to see how does the relationship need to adjust and shift and what types of things to pay attention to in the change. So it doesn't turn into a crisis. It doesn't turn into resentment. It doesn't turn into
a big fight.
A divorce.
That too. And I think of this especially with balancing individuation of self and how important that is to largely have done prior to partnership. Big proponent of it, as I'm sure all the listeners know by now. Identify these things within yourself and do the necessary separation from your family of origin, again, as much as possible, ideally, prior to partnering. So if religion was a core value for your family system that you grew up in, and not so much for you anymore, right? This is what I do a lot of work on with like intergenerational patterns that I see, that people have this experience. And I can use mine as an example. I was raised incredibly Catholic, extremely religious, had my own crisis of faith, I guess you would say, middle school, high school, and just slowly started disconnecting. And it doesn't mean I don't have faith at all. It doesn't mean I don't think the value of religion, those things are still alive and good. I believe in God. That has not been in question. The experience, though, of more of an organized religion, what type of faith, what type of service would I prefer to go to, that has changed so much over my lifespan. And that is not necessarily congruent with my family of origin. So that is a personal journey I had to go on. Why was I pushing so hard to stay connected to my faith? Why was I pushing so hard to have my significant other join me at church when I didn't even really want to be going to it? Oh, it's because the template I was raised in, and all I heard from, you know, my one parent growing up was, it's so important. It has to be this, 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 and this. And then I would look at upward in the generation and be like, but you seem kind of miserable with it. So why would I ever choose that for myself? Right? Like, why was I so desperately trying to stay connected with that value from the family I came from? And setting boundaries, individuating, being very intentional on what do I actually want separate from that? If I had no knowledge of it when I was raised, what would I pick? Right? Those more explorative questions helped me to get to a place where I could make a decision on how or if or when I wanted faith included in my partnership, raising of children, et cetera, all the, you know, present, future questions. What was that like in an experience, or what that was like in an experience, largely dictated what kind of partner I would have been okay with. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I would have found somebody to look at and be like, I'm spending the rest of my life with you, had I not done that very important faith core value lifestyle exploration, because he's not the same faith as I was raised. His family is still very active in their faith. And that's a super important discussion that's ongoing, you know, what faith to raise children in, what faith to do. There's a lot more to it that if you don't have comfort on it on your own, it's definitely not going to be comfortable when your in-laws bring it up to you and you're just like, and there's like either this defensive response or this shocked response of like, we're going to have to talk about that. So do it on your own first, get at least comfort with the language and terminology and where your triggers and activations lie. So when this comes out, it won't be as big of a shock. And religion is a huge one, especially nowadays where we're not as a society, largely, we're getting married later. We're not as connected. We're doing a lot more self-identity exploration because we're allowed to, and we're availing ourselves of it. That may be something that shifts over time too. Partners I've seen also long-term can become incredibly religious later in life, where it wasn't as important if they met in their 20s to 30s, but by 50, 60, 70, when mortality starts knocking on the door, they develop a different sense of wanting to have that connection to a higher power. What is the great beyond? Be very mindful. These discussions can flex and flow. Have some sense of who you are and where your starting point is. And if you know for a fact, you would never want, I don't think I could ever be with an atheist. I from not only all the lifestyle stuff that probably comes with it, it's just a fundamental disagreement of the way I view and perceive the world. That's something I know. That's not something I would sample in if I was ever to hire a matchmaker, or God forbid, have to go on dating apps again. That's not something I'd be like, yeah, I'm open to anything. Uh-huh. Don't be open to anything unless you truly are willing to put your money where your mouth is and be open to anything.
Yeah. Because it's a big difference to say, hey, I'm open to meeting people or accepting any human, you know, socially. Correct. That's very different.
You're not marrying them. Yeah.
Committing a life with someone
and raising
and saying,
children,
hey, we want to build, you know, and enjoying a life together. So it, you know, looking and filtering for compatibility, it's not to say that someone who you don't feel compatible with is in any way less than you.
Correct.
It's to go like, I just don't know if we're really going to be setting ourselves up for the success of a joined life.
Right.
Because inherently there's going to be changes when you join your life with someone else's. That's great. That's one of the beautiful things of partnership. But that means change. Change is hard. Change is stressful. We can tolerate those challenges and stress with certain skill sets, but it's going to be difficult. Correct. And you want to be looking at, oh, and what's the vision of that change? What will that look like? And is that in a positive way aligned with what I want individually for myself? Mm-hmm. Or is it, oh my gosh, this is so not the kind of life that I had envisioned or that I'm hoping for.
Yes. And I have couples who have been on this journey for quite some time where there is a fundamental core value difference that while being asked in more of an explorative way, they are able to identify has at least for some been lingering since the start, even in the chemistry phase when they did first meet. But we do become delusional. We have this delusional experience when we're in first, you know, partnership with someone. Oh, they'll change. They'll be different. If only this, when they love me more, we have all these musings that we think that the person's going to change. And that's the age old trope, which is funny. And because it's partially accurate, women marry men hoping they will change and men marry women hoping they'll never change. Everybody changes. Ideally, it's in a positive direction. All the more reason to have that discussion of what are your future plans for life if you have any identified or not thus far. That's already a good discussion point if they don't or when they do. What is that like long term? The couples I'm working with are journeying through how important is religion? How important is getting along with how to raise children? How important is family of origin and closeness? Does one partner view it as potentially enmeshment because they weren't close to their own family growing up? And does the other partner view it as this is a totally normal amount of time to see family? I go to their dinner, you know, their house for dinner every week. We're very close. and I know for my family as well, we're extremely close. That was a non-negotiable for me when picking a partner to build a life with. I tried, trust me, I tried dating somebody where I like was making all these compromises mentally of like, well, that's fine if my family, you know, this, and then I'll never see mine. And then, and his is terrible, but no, like I, and everybody chooses for themselves. I'm not saying if you're listening, do what I did. I knew how incongruent and incompatible it felt when I was with someone who did not have at all, or to the level I did, the value of family. And in fact, would obviously warning signs of it not being a healthy or compatible relationship was like, well, you don't really need them. We can build one together, et cetera. And if I want to caveat this, if you are leaving an unhealthy or tumultuous family of origin, right? Let's say alcoholism or substance use was rampant, infidelity, poor boundaries, serious untreated mental health concerns. If you're leaving a chaotic family of origin and entering into a quote unquote healthier family dynamic, and you do have to set some boundaries with the family you came from, right? Perhaps less codependency or enmeshment. That is a more appropriate separation that you still have to choose for yourself and go, this is really tough for me, but I see now, right? Through therapy, I see how unhealthy my family I came from was. I do want to not have contact with them because I want to build a healthier life than I had. That's not what I'm talking about. It's when you have a very healthy family system and they're wonderful and you get caught up and convinced, usually with guys who have the dark triad personality traits, they're so sexy and edgy and all this stuff. And especially women in their young 20s to early 30s, that is the guy that you're typically really into, the bad boy that they can't kick, but they know something quote unquote better is out there for them. You're having this crisis of your mental state of like, oh crap, we got together when I was in my early 20s. Now I'm 35 and this isn't like cool anymore. Like this bad boy complex is not doing it for me. I miss my family. I miss Sunday dinners. I miss what I gave up to be with them. It's an uncomfortable spot to find yourself in if you do feel like you're compromising that value of family or communication or religion, right? Don't, unless you have really thoroughly analyzed and you are making your true authentic choice, I would recommend not compromising on one of those values. If you do indeed know year after year, relationship after relationship, that is a common thread that's very important to you. If it's never faltered, chances are it's not going to get less as you get older. It's going to get stronger as you get older.
And I think kind of just going back to what we said before, when you know that about yourself, then you can communicate that to your partner. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is like one of like the holy rules that we always say for whatever our discussion is on the podcast is know yourself, understand your thoughts and feelings, or in this case, values, so that you can communicate that to your partner, so that you can go out and be clear, like, this is me, let's talk about it.
Yep.
It's that really important step-by-step process that is good for you individually and good for the relationship to be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So I think it's pretty obvious that we, you and me, Talia, believe that compatibility is important, that it's not overrated. And I think it's just, you know, hitting home this idea of, okay, so how to productively look at the themes of compatibility,
right?
Using core values as sort of the inroad to that, mm-hmm. and having like a nice, great discussion about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one thing that I want to, that we haven't directly talked about, or I guess we did, whatever. I want to talk a little bit more is the relational type of values in how you talk about things.
Got it.
Just as an example.
Sure.
So not just looking at these really important core values of family, religion, what we care about doing with our lifestyles, the all great, right. But also I think it's stuff, you know, this is couples therapists, obviously. What do you value in conflict resolution?
Yep.
How do you value communication? How do you value emotional intimacy? And where are you at in that compatible space? That's going to be key. Are you the kind of person where you really do think that when there's conflict in a relationship, each partner really needs to take their own responsibility, go do their own healing, and then come back? Or Is it more, no, we talk about this together and figure out as a team? I don't think either of those are wrong, but maybe the style you have could lead you to feel more compatible or incompatible. Or again, having a discussion with your partner that, hey, this is how this works for me relationally. Are we on the same page? Are we in that diagram of values? Or are we different? And then how do we manage that difference? So I just want to throw out that idea of really want to, we mentioned relational values, but I think that's so important in a compatibility stance, because that's what allows you to navigate disagreements or potential incompatibilities successfully.
Yeah, I will break down some of the other like relational core values in support of that. It's active conflict style and conflict resolution style, preferred communication style, tone, cadence, frequency, etc. Again, the sexuality and the intimacy piece, that is definitely a relational value that most people have, because that type of intimacy is glue in a partnership. It's also what delineates a long-term friendship and a romantic relationship. You do put your parts near each other, ideally, or have the desire to, even if you're not able to, like after having a kid, et cetera. Family values, that's largely based on, it's individual and relational. Like you said, that can flex. And I think another one that I would add after that would be, I just had it and it left my brain. Communication styles, conflict styles, intimacy, family, and like a temperament way of being. Am I really driven, focused, career, active, outdoors? Like, what is my preferred just way of moving through the world? What is my lifestyle? Do I have a greater sense of openness, need for fun and adventure? Or am I more the type that's like a homebody, go with the flow, open to vacation, but definitely not gearing up to be on like the next amazing race? Because that does have a large impact on future goals, career, et cetera. If I want to travel the world, you know, two times over before I turn 40, and my partner is like, no, I'm good. I really just want to chill. And maybe one vacation to Hawaii a year does it for me. Like you said, there could be something deeper underneath that. So I would say like lifestyle, both present and future, and the bullet points that go underneath that for our relational values as well.
Yeah, I think about that as like personality traits. And that's where a discussion can uncover, is it related to core value, which could lead to incompatibility? Right. Or is it, okay, we're different and there's wiggle room there. So we can still be compatible, but just know we're different. You know, the homebody is just a great example of, so that can be like a personality trait that's very manageable and can still be very compatible if one partner is much more adventuresome. If that's okay, that the homebody either is like, well, with you, I'll go on the adventure, or the couple is cool with adventure partner, go do your thing, homebody stay home, and they both feel good about that. Or I guess, I don't know why I'm valuing the adventure one. Maybe that's my value, but, or the adventure one going, all right, cool, my partner likes to stay home more, I will just do the one vacation a year or whatever.
And that's where compromise can come in, really having those discussions, learning. And this is something in Gottman style therapy that's done as well, that I don't know what's going on outside where I am, that in Gottman style couples therapy as well, that dreams within conflict, like a core value exploration. Why is this so important? And not in an accusatory way. I'm genuinely curious. I want to learn, what does it do for you to, if we did, what would it do for you to go travel the world at 40? What dream would it honor? What core value would it uphold? Then there's wiggle room in an appropriate way that you can get behind and go, oh, I totally get it now. Makes total sense. Yeah, this other thing that would be incompatible, it's more important for me, for our relationship. It sounds like this would have such a positive impact on so many other ways. Totally cool with it, right? But again, it's making it a conscious effort, communication-based compromise versus I'm being, you know, elbowed, armed into this of like, strong-armed into it versus, oh no, this is a decision we arrived at together in a relational conversation versus an ultimatum was given.
As always, as we start wrapping it, it's communication and intention, so that these things aren't hidden and then they become resentments or breaks.
Correct.
And I just want to honor that communication intention. I get why that can be a little scary, is because especially early on, if you're talking about, hey, are we compatible? One of the outcomes could be, oh, we're not.
No.
And that sucks.
Answer is no. Yeah.
But as you mentioned earlier, it's great to rip that Band-Aid off as it arises to, you know, deal with it, to either go, let's not continue this, this relationship. Or let's just say it someone's changed over the course of a long relationship, go, oh, okay, this is not a compatibility picture. How are we going to do this together and figure it out? Mm-hmm. Is it a divorce situation, or is it a, okay, we need to do some work and maybe go to a therapist, or be like, suddenly go, we need to prioritize our relationship to figure this out. Whatever it is, though, I get that it's scary, that sometimes the answer could be, no, we're not compatible. What do we do?
So. And be, yeah, I will wrap up on, be honest. If you, in your heart of hearts, and the fact we should maybe do an episode on the ultimatum, the show, I think that would be a fascinating discussion. If you have not watched on Netflix, I'm going to recommend you, Ryan, and listeners catch up on it, because just, it's phenomenal entertainment. It's sad that there's, you know, real people, but they consented to it. So that's an aside. Be honest with yourself. And if you do get to the point of an internal ultimatum, not threat, but really you get quiet with yourself and go, I would rather not be in a partnership that doesn't include kids versus one that does, right? Like, not ultimatum, but really get clear with yourself in that way of, what are your hard lines and hard boundaries? And it may not be incompatibility. it may be incompatible, right? It might not be compatible with the partner that you've been working on building a life with. And that is okay. I want to give permission. It's okay. It's okay to be sad about that. It's okay to have a lot of feelings come up about that, a grief and loss, especially. You will, if that's where you're at and you're listening to this and you're going, crap, I don't think I'm that compatible with my partner, even though we have really great chemistry. It's okay to reach out for help, and it's okay to not be in that relationship anymore, to free up both of you to go find somebody whenever the time is right for someone who is more compatible long-term. Once you find that new person, it's much easier, obviously, to move on and look back and go, whew, I'm so glad I took that leap and made that different decision, but it's not easy. So I want to really, you know, highlight for listeners, be honest with yourself. Sometimes that's very difficult and it can be a painful process. It's usually worth it on the other side.
Totally worth it. Be honest, be genuine, yes. Communicate with intention. Loves yes. it. Very nice. That'll do it for this week's episode on the podcast. Thanks for listening to the Couples Guide podcast. I don't know why I'm so excited to say podcast right now. But no, seriously, thank you, listeners. Appreciate it. If you have any questions for me and Talia, or specific questions you want us to address on the podcast, shoot us an email, ryanandtalia@thecouplesguidepodcast.com.
Yes, you can also tune into, it's ideally weekly, but sometimes every other week, Q&A I do on my page on Instagram, and that is @TaliaBombola. So add in any questions or comments that you might have that could be a long form episode, and we will see you next time.
Thanks so much. Take good care.